You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant and offers world-class support. Fullscript also gives you access to my custom targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to sign up for your free Fullscript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's DearHoffmanStore.com. DearHoffmanStore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's part two of an investigation of integrative rheumatology. We have with us one of a rare breed, an integrative rheumatologist, someone who practices conventional rheumatology. She's board certified as a rheumatologist, but she's also board certified in integrative medicine via her training at the Andrew Weil program, which is graduating cadres of doctors who are schooled in both conventional and natural approaches to medical problems. So in part one, you know, we discussed diet, but I want to get a little more specific about supplements, because there's a lot of potential for supplements to have an impact on inflammatory conditions. But there's also concerns that, you know, do they mix and match appropriately with medications? And I can think of no better person to ask questions about that than today's guest, Dr. Jill Weintraub. So, Dr. Weintraub, so what are some of the things that generally are compatible with medication that can be given to patients with rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis, lupus, et cetera?
Yeah, well, there's several, and there's several that we have evidence for. You know, one of the big ones is actually vitamin D. Mm-hmm. And what we know is that vitamin D deficiency is not only widespread, but people who are vitamin D deficient are more likely to have disease flares with autoimmune diseases. We see this in rheumatoid arthritis, and we even see it in lupus. So that's one that we like to correct. And we correct it usually to about 40 or 50, and that's coming from the rheumatology literature. I know different specialties, they might have different levels, but that's usually our target, and we know that treating those deficiencies and getting people on a good level of vitamin D decreases disease flares and also helps medication work better, in addition, of course, to providing some protection from osteoporosis. So that's one of the ones that I always go to pretty quickly. And then, of course, you know, we have a whole array of different phytochemicals or different food pigments, things like curcumin, and there's a variety of other ones that are all having anti-inflammatory responses. And there's some literature showing that there's efficacy in rheumatoid arthritis for some of the ones that are better absorbed. So, you know, when we take a curcumin, you know, we take it. And then the question is really, where is it working? Is it staying inside of our GI tract, and is it having an effect on the microbiome, or is it crossing through the wall of the GI tract, and is it able to get into the joint? So in rheumatology, the ones that we have evidence for are the ones that go across the wall of the GI tract. So something like a Therocarmin or a Mareva curcumin. These are curcumin that have been modified so that they're better absorbed. And
so-called liposomal forms of curcumin, where in effect it's packaged in nanospheres of lipids that can be taken up by the digestive tract and go into the circulation.
Yeah, and those are useful also in my patient population, because those nanospheres, they go right into the bloodstream and they don't actually go through the liver. And that's important because a lot of our medication goes through the liver. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to get into drug-herb interaction. Those bioavailable forms of curcumin appear to be safe. So that's something also that I try to use with my patients, and it's usually very well tolerated.
It's interesting.
Go ahead. Of course, another thing that we often use are fish oil or omega-3 fatty acids. And this has been looked at pretty extensively in rheumatology. And what we know is that to get an anti-inflammatory effect, we usually need to be on a pretty good dose. So at least 2 grams, but sometimes up to 4 grams or even more. Unfortunately, you know, we don't really have good information telling us which of the omega-3 fatty acids are the best ones for rheumatoid arthritis. So there's EPA, there's DHA. I know we have some information in some other syndromes. In rheumatology, we don't really have that. So I also encourage people to try and get omega-3 fatty acids from their diet, either by eating wild fatty fish, or to try and get some of the plant-based sources and walnuts or pumpkin seeds or flax. And I find usually between diet and supplementation, we can get a good enough dose that we start to see an anti-inflammatory effect from it.
There's some other natural anti-inflammatories, boswellan, for example, derivative of common frankincense. Is that something that's on your radar screen?
Yeah. So I often combine boswellia with a curcumin, and I find that that can be very helpful for alleviating joint pain. One caveat with that, though, is when we put people on boswellia, we can't have them take NSAID. So they can't take their Motrin or their Aleve, which some people are relying on, because with it, you just get a tremendous amount of bruising. But I find that the boswellia is often very effective, and is also actually good for some GI inflammation as well. We use it also in ulcerative colitis.
Mm-hmm. Another autoimmune condition where it works locally on the intestinal wall and can be helpful. What are any of the other herbs that you find helpful that can be safely used in conjunction with medication or more standalone, you know, when you're on minimal medication?
Yeah, well, so I would say the other two classes of supplements that I often use are probiotics.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes adaptogens. The microbiome, as I'm sure you're very familiar with, you know, we're in rheumatology, I think we're in our infancy of really learning of how to modulate it and to do to make it work with us and not against us. And it does seem like, again, there's not a one-size-fits-all solution, and that some people are able to really change their microbiome through diet and probiotics. Some people, it's a lot harder, and that may have something to do with whether or not they had a lot of antibiotics in childhood, or whether they had a cesarean birth, or even a lot of stress or genetic. But we are getting some information that there are some strains of probiotics that may be helpful in rheumatoid arthritis. So Lactobacillus casei is one of them. So mm-hmm. I have been putting people who I think may have some disruption to the microbiome in their gut, I am using some probiotics with that. And then, of course, as we mentioned earlier, you know, of course, we have different biomes or collections of microorganisms in most of the cavities of our body. So especially including the mouth, and perioral gum disease is a very strong risk factor for autoimmune disease. So there are actually now some oral probiotic melts that seem like they may have some efficacy in working against the gum disease that seems to be a real driver of autoimmunity. So I'll sometimes use it in that capacity as well.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, switching over to adaptogen. So adaptogen being different phytochemicals that help reset the adrenocortical axis. And that's an endocrine cyst that's activated really by the chronic stress that pretty much everybody is feeling today. So when we have an activated adrenal cortical axis, we have a constant steady stream of cortisol, which is a very pro-inflammatory over time endocrine marker, and that tends to drive inflammation. So there are some phytochemicals we can use to help reset that stuff. So sometimes I will use things like ashwagandha, which in addition to resetting that axis is good for anxiety, can be good for sleep. And we know that your immune system really resets itself at night. So getting a good night's sleep is very important in terms of controlling inflammation. And then sometimes I will also use other things like ginseng, panax ginseng. But with that, I can get into some drug interactions. So that I use less liberally.
And I was going to ask you, one theory about why people develop autoimmunity is because of so-called leaky gut or altered intestinal permeability. You pay attention to the microbiome and you administer probiotics and you work with diet, but do you ever specifically target the gut wall to use so-called gut sealing nutrient support, reduce improve the gap junctions so that they don't allow undigested food, antigens to traverse into the circulatory system, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah. So very frequently, especially in the beginning, if people are having symptoms suggestive of leaky gut, but I will often, at least for the first month, try and put people on what I would call a leaky gut protocol.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to lean toward a traditional Chinese medicine way of approaching this. And traditional Chinese, and there's not really a big difference between food and medicine. It's all on the same continuum. So they suggest foods like cooked soup, squashes, warm soupy liquids mm-hmm. that are easily absorbed and not irritating
Broths,
to the gut.
Things with collagen and so on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, you know, also sometimes I will use different powders containing aloe and marshmallow mm-hmm. and other plant-based chemicals that are very soothing to the gut to give it a coating, you know, deglycerized whiskeris I find is very nice for that. And do that and try and give the gut a chance to really heal and then try to lose the phytochemical support for that and try and really then do it with diet over time.
And do you ever treat patients who have, painful conditions like fibromyalgia? I know that's kind of a wastebasket term, even polymyalgia rheumatica. These are conditions that are, you know, often really challenging.
Yeah, so all the time. And what I find is, you know, most of my patients have some component of fibromyalgia. And what I mean by that is that anybody who's in chronic pain for more than 3 months or so starts to develop neurologic changes. So the nerves at the level of the joint become upregulated, pain mediators become in greater numbers, and then that goes to the brain and the parts of the brain that sense pain. And those areas become more active. And then people start to feel pain in areas of their body that appear to be physiologically normal. And, you know, for a while, it was hard as doctors for us to understand this because the areas of the body that we were examining that the patient felt so much pain in looked structurally normal to us. But now we have really good studies showing that, yeah, these areas look structurally normal because you can't see the nerves and we can't see what's going on. But if you could see all of that, you would see so much more metabolic activity in places where people have experienced pain for a long time. So, you know, what I find is sometimes we make the psoriatic arthritis much better, or we make the rheumatoid arthritis much better, but people continue to have pain. And it's that neurologic response that has now been coined central sensitization is a very real thing. And so, of course, we have to treat that as well for people to really get better.
And is there any role for paying some attention to the endocrinology here? Because I've noticed that especially patients who are on steroids, they have vanishingly low levels of things like DHEA. and that DHEA can have energizing, anti-inflammatory, analgesic effects, particularly in men, but in both sexes. Testosterone sometimes can be helpful in men with rheumatological conditions. Is that ever in your purview?
Yeah, and actually, you know, one of the places where I use that the most is actually in lupus, mm-hmm. where fatigue and frailty happened so quickly. And there was actually a good study done several years ago with DHEA mm-hmm. where people
using
actually
very high doses.
Felt better.
Yeah, I think it was like 200 milligrams of DHEA, which for women could be a little challenging, you know, with potential side effects, acne, facial hair, but it definitely it seemed to do the trick.
Yeah, I've had a lot of success with it. I find that people usually do feel better on it, not everyone. And then it does appear to really be very safe long term, but I feel particularly in postmenopausal women, and of course want them to have appropriate GYN follow-up just to make sure that we're not getting into any unwanted estrogen side effect.
Indeed. So tell us a little bit about your practice. You practice here in New York City, but you also do telemedicine, and you have other venues where you practice. You're sort of the roving integrative rheumatologist, right, these days?
Yeah, look, so I have offices in both New York City and in Westchester County. And I find that for certain syndromes, you know, telehealth is very amenable to taking care of people with rheumatologic conditions, particularly once we know what we're treating. And we really just need to have take a deep dive into, you know, what sort of medication we want to use, what sort of lifestyle changes we want to use. And there's a lot of discussion and shared decision making that has to take place. So yeah, to your point, I am in a lot of both actual and virtual locations these days.
Well, I think a lot of patients with rheumatological problems will find it reassuring that they can talk about this kind of stuff with you and not be dismissed, not be told that there's no evidence that these things have any efficacy, because you know better and you also know how to wield them. You have training and experience in taking an intelligent medicine approach to challenging rheumatological problems. So give us your website once again, and what resources can people find there?
Yeah, so my website is www.jillweintraubmd.com. And on my website, you'll find a link to my blog, which is called kitchenprescription.com. And in my blog, which I write with a wonderful dermatologist by the name of Diana Hurwitz, who's also interested in integrative approaches to dermatologic conditions like psoriasis particularly.
Oh, sounds like my next guest. I might tee her up. It's her conversation.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
Great. Well, after the broadcast, you'll send me a link.
Sure.
Great.
Sure. But we look at food and other supplements and dive more into the lifestyle aspect of treating our disease.
Indeed. Okay, so great stuff. Congratulations on a dual career path, a career path which integrates both the best of high-tech conventional medicine. I'm sure you stay well abreast of trends in prescribing some of these new miracle medications, but with the perspective that lifestyle changes, diet, and the use of appropriate supplements can make all the difference in the world for success. So thanks very much for joining us. Really appreciate talking to you.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure to be here.
That's Dr. Jill Weintraub. Thank you. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover intelligent medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have, and should seek the assistance of their health care professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations.